Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Judge, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. 3 minutes.
Good morning, Your Honors. Teresa Pagliaro from the Sicilisi. I believe I would like to point out, I think the important thing is this clearly turns on the facts. I think everyone can agree this is a case that turns on the facts. The things I would like to point out are twofold. One, the application of Zuniga, I'm going to go with my gut on this, Zuniga, to this case. And two, the three alleged potential co-conspirator pool of people. The application of Zuniga, I cited Zuniga initially in my brief just to point out the definition of conspiracy and specifically conspiracy to distribute a substance. Beyond that, that case is not applicable, and I believe the Commonwealth relies heavily on that case to bolster their argument. That case, Zuniga, was the seller, not the quote-unquote buyer. I'm going to have to do a lot of assuming without conceding to make these arguments, Your Honors. Ms. Sicilisi is the alleged buyer, not the seller. It's complete opposite of Zuniga. Zuniga was a hand-to-hand exchange where the buyer and the seller were both known people. Zuniga, there was an exchange of money that was clearly in evidence, and there was also an extension of credit that was clearly in evidence between these two people. That goes to the retained stake in the venture that is required for a conspiracy to distribute. And finally, Judge, the buyer informed Zuniga specifically by telling him, I intend to sell these things in Virginia. None of those facts are in the case of Barr.
Well, there was a debt sheet, and I realize that's a different relationship than what you're talking about. It's not supplier to middleman. It's middleman to ultimate seller, again, making some assumptions based on the facts. But it looked like there were some credit transactions that were being made in that relationship.
Judge, I find that an interesting approach because I think it's another red herring. These alleged O sheets, and again, assuming without conceding or deciding, they are O sheets. One, they're not dated. There's no evidence as to when they actually occurred. Two, there's no way that Ms. Sicilisi could have been selling on credit the marijuana that's at issue in this case, which is in a box in the house. Whether she had in the past sold some other something or other to these people on credit, for cash, otherwise, it's not relevant to the case. The substance in this case is a box of unopened marijuana sitting in the house. It was never opened. She never saw. There's no evidence she ever saw it. No evidence she ever touched it. Again, I don't believe they were O sheets. If, in fact, they were O sheets, there's no evidence as to when they occurred. This could have been a past life. She could have turned over a new leaf and said, I'm not doing this anymore, and failed to smartly get rid of whatever other O sheets she had. But there's no correlation, even remotely, to the marijuana that's sitting inside the doorway in this case. Judge, the other issue I think that has to be addressed from my perspective is the three possible co-conspirators. The Commonwealth points to the California seller, Mr. Estrada. As I pointed out in my brief, the chances that Mr. Estrada really put his real name on the return label of the marijuana are pretty slim. So I don't think there is a Mr. Estrada exactly per se. We don't know who that person is. But as required in direct sales, there's no evidence of let's just say Mr. Estrada's knowledge of what Ms. Sicilisi, again, assuming without conceding, she was going to do with these items. And there's no evidence he had any stake in the venture. There's no evidence of any cash exchange or credit. In fact, that question was asked in, I believe, on cross by Mr. Bowen, that there was no, they went through the checkbooks, they went through everything in Ms. Sicilisi's room and found checkbooks. There was no evidence of any payment to California or any similar payment. So I don't think the California seller can be the co-conspirator. The case law is that one sale is not by itself sufficient. I think the Commonwealth's going to rely on the wholly unlawful character of the substance, but I would argue, and I'm going to try to jump ahead of Mr. Uberman here, I would argue that, one, we're assuming it's wholly unlawful in California, and I don't know California law, quite frankly. I would imagine probably sending a box of marijuana that much is unlawful, but we don't know. We don't have those facts. We don't have California law. As far as wholly unlawful substance, it is a lawful substance in various places in this country. So I don't think that...
Isn't the standard what's wholly unlawful in Virginia?
Well, Judge, I don't...
For purposes of a Virginia conspiracy?
Well, for purposes of a Virginia conspiracy, nothing happened in Virginia then. It wasn't sent from Virginia.
It was sent to Virginia.
Correct, which had no correlation to Mrs. Solis. I mean, to the degree that that relates to this case.
I mean, for the proposition of wholly unlawful.
At that time, I would argue, yes, in Virginia.
Okay.
Having that,
that's, that
honor,
was
would be, yes,
okay.
Ma'am. I would agree with that, but I don't think it ties together sufficiently. Judge, the second thing I wanted to address was the O sheets. They're not analogous because this is not the seller to the buyer. This is the alleged buyer to someone else. So anything that's related to selling on credit, if there even were, which I argue there wasn't, doesn't fulfill what's required to get to the standard of conspiracy to distribute. You're now talking about conspiracy of Mrs. Solis to distribute to some unknown persons the items that are in a box on her floor. That it doesn't even make sense. There's no identity of any of those other people. There's no evidence that any of those deals were related to the items in that box. And there's no evidence that there was anything sold on credit. It couldn't have been sold on credit. She didn't have it. She couldn't have sold anything she didn't have. She didn't have the items yet. And, Judge, the last one, which really is difficult for me, is her father. John Solis is the alleged third potential / alleged co-conspirator. Judge, this is another red herring, and I think it's important for me as a defense attorney to point out Mrs. Solis's claims of innocence, which this I love when the prosecution does this, being used as proof of her guilt is about as backwards as you can get. If you look at the joint appendix, you can see that, I think it was page 20, the only adults in the house were her and her father and the minor child, which was never referenced. Her claim, this is a conspiracy against me and my father, mm-hmm. Well, the police entered their home on surprise, and if she had no idea about any box being delivered, of course that's going to upset her, and that's going to cause her to say, what's going on here? This is like a military state invading my home. Claims of innocence can't be turned around to be claims of inculpation. That just blows my mind. Judge,
well, counsel, that argument, though, is an argument you make to the trier of fact, isn't it? I mean, we're replete with case law that says that the trier of fact is entitled to believe that a defendant is lying to conceal guilt or that various statements made by a defendant can be presumed to be to protect themselves from guilt. It's a valid argument to make to the trier of fact.
And it is, and I don't remember if Mr. Bowen made it or not, Judge, but I think it is a valid argument to make at that point that it can be used to hide guilt. But to say it actually proves a conspiracy is turning that entire thing on its head. To say claims of innocence are evidence to show a conspiracy, it doesn't make any sense. Could it be disbelieved that the person is innocent? Sure. But to use that statement of innocence as to tie to evidence of a conspiracy to distribute just seems far-fetched to me. Judge, the other thing that I want to point out is there's no evidence anywhere of an agreement between the father and the daughter. He accepted the package, which is not proof of conspiracy between the two of them to distribute anything, much less why he accepted it, I have no idea. But there's no evidence of an agreement. There's no evidence they talked. There's no evidence any of the quote-unquote handwriting on the O sheets, these mystery books, any of that was his, any of it was hers, quite frankly. There's no evidence whose handwriting it was. And without that, Mr. Solis, he's not a co-conspirator, but here's the big one for me. And I was hoping it was in the record because I wasn't the trial attorney, and it was. At the time of the trial, Mr. Solis, Joint Appendix, page 96, had been originally charged in these matters. At the time of the trial, however, he was no longer charged. The charges, and I'm saying something that's not in the record, were null pros. But the record reflects the charges were no longer in front of the court. So the co-conspirator, whom we're using to prove this conspiracy, the charges against that person were never prosecuted. So I'm not clear on which of the three co-conspirators the Commonwealth is relying on, maybe all, maybe an amalgam. I don't know. But I think you have to look at them individually, look for an agreement with each one, and look for the requirements in direct sales in Zuniga as far as what's required. California seller, there's no way we know his intent or his stake. There's no evidence of any stake in the conspiracy. owe sheets, another red herring, not analogous, she could not have sold what she didn't have, and Mr. Sicilisi, above all else, was charged and his charges were dismissed, or dropped. Judge, I think factually, and I will tell the court, this court rejected a petition for appeal as to the possession charge. So that still stands. But Judge, I think factually there's no evidence required of an agreement, and because of that, this court should reverse the conviction on the conspiracy charge.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Uberman.
Good morning. Please report. David Uberman on behalf of the Commonwealth.
I'm concerned about the conspiracy buffet. Was there a theory that the Commonwealth had in this case?
There was, Your Honor, and I think there were three discrete theories. And there's an important distinction, I think, that I need to make at the outset of the argument that will clarify those three different and discrete avenues. And that is, Ms. Sicilisi was not charged with conspiracy to distribute that brick of marijuana, 6.5 pounds of marijuana that was sitting on her doorstep. She was charged with conspiracy to distribute marijuana on August 10th, 2012. And if the court looks at the appendix, the indictments on page 1 and 2, this is clear, because we look at the punishment. As the court knows, conspiracy under the Drug Act is penalized as though it were the completion of the substantive offense. The punishment on page 1 of the joint appendix for possession with the intent to distribute more than 5 pounds is 5 to 30 years. The punishment for the conspiracy indictment, which is on page 2, is 1 to 10 years. So it's clear the indictment does not allege conspiracy to distribute the marijuana that showed up on that date. And the Commonwealth's argument that most bears upon, and the one I would like to address first, even though it's not addressed first in the brief, is the O-sheets. And the distinction is important because the appellant here argues, well, it's impossible for Ms. Sicilisi to have loaned out on credit marijuana that she never received. And the Commonwealth's response to that is pretty plain, and I think this court, in its order denying the petition on other grounds, noted the same thing. The house was literally filled in almost nearly every room with marijuana, what this court described in some rooms as retail level. Ms. Sicilisi in her room had tubs of marijuana that were organized by strain. There were wads of $1,000 cash throughout. There were bong, bowls, wrapping paper, you name it. There was a large digital scale in plain sight on the floor of her room, which Detective Haney, who qualified as an expert, testified would only be used to measure distribution-level amounts of marijuana, what he called half-pound amounts. The O-sheets that we're referring to are not some remnants of a past life, as the appellant contends on appeal, because we know, one, it was hidden in a hollowed-out, it says, Bible-esque book in a bathroom drawer, and we know for a fact that she still had marijuana everywhere throughout the house, so she had not turned the page on this distribution.
Ultimately, you allege, or it is alleged in the indictment, that the conspiracy occurred on August the 10th, 2012. And as I recall, there were no dates on any of those O-sheets. So how do you bring, who did she conspire with, and how did it happen on, how did you determine, the Commonwealth determined that it happened on the 12th, if in fact you're correct?
And that's a good point, Your Honor. And the response is that this is clearly a circumstantial case. There is no direct evidence here. And in most conspiracy cases, you're going to have a hard time finding direct evidence. So what the Commonwealth's position is that given the ongoing nature of the conspiracy, and by that I mean the fact that, again, I don't want to belabor this ad nauseum, but that there was marijuana in literally nearly every room of the home, and it was sorted by strain, and it was retail levels, especially in Ms. Sicilisi's room, that her having secreted this O-sheet away, and the detective's testimony saying that, specifically identifying three people, and if they're aliases, I don't think it matters, but as Annie, Sammy, and Mr. Deeds, the detective testified that Ms. Sicilisi provided at least half-pound quantities of marijuana to those three persons on credit. So in this case, the conspiracy here is not Ms. Sicilisi as middleman. This is her as distributor to lower distributors.
Well, even if we take your statements for correct and the proper application of the law, I still, and I don't mean to be redundant, but I still cannot follow as to how you then specifically accord it to the date that is charged, August the 10th, when there are no dates that we find in anywhere in that record.
And that's true, Your Honor, and that's a valid point. And my response, again, and I do hope that I'm answering the court's question, is that essentially the Commonwealth was not required to have present either signed or dated records. I think that the court was allowed. Again, this is a circumstantial case, and we don't view.
I appreciate that. That seems to be the glaring hole that I'm looking at, and I understand you can't answer it because it wasn't in the record. I just thought maybe
true,
you had some better theory than I was able to come up with when I read through this.
No, Your Honor, it's the theory is that O-sheet, the fact that it was hidden away, combined with her current supply of marijuana, is indicative of the fact that, that you know, under Zuniga, what Zuniga says, and again, I don't want to belabor this, but is that it's particularly sinister when this type of credit relationship is particularly sinister because it allows lower-level players who would not otherwise have the capital investment to play this criminal game, play the game at a higher level.
But and that sinister or not, though, these O-sheets reflect something that was already in existence before August the 10th, the date of the shipment, right?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. And the Commonwealth's position is that, again, it's not that 6.5 pounds of marijuana that showed up on that date that forms the basis of this second theory of distribution. This is based upon the marijuana that she clearly already had as evinced through what was discovered throughout her house.
That it was an ongoing enterprise.
And further, I think when we take Detective, and Judge Jacob, this may answer your question to some extent, you know, Detective Haney testified that O-sheets are used to indicate what the lower level distributor owes to that person. There's no indication that any of those debts were paid off in those O-sheets. It simply indicates the amount that they were given, $4,300, $2,600, and Detective Haney interpreted that information as equating that as to about half pound amounts of marijuana. So the best way I can answer your question, Your Honor, is that regardless of the fact that there is no date on those, there is no indication that there's any satisfaction of the debt that those parties owe to Ms.
Counsel,
don't we also have, in reference to those O-sheets, we don't know. We have two different types of, or perhaps the same, some in printing, some in cursive. So we don't know who compiled those O-sheets, do we?
Well, Your Honor, I think to some extent we do, because what I'm expressly referring to is Commonwealth's Exhibit 4A, and I believe that's on page 127 of the appendix. And that's what specifically identifies these three names and various amounts given to them. And I think that we know the answer to the court's question. And I'm sorry, I'm just completely lost. Would you please ask the question again?
I was asking you that we didn't know who had entered those.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Who had been the person that entered
I appreciate
the
that.
Information.
I think it's fair to assume that given their location in the bathroom, which was adjacent, this is not a common bathroom. This is a bathroom that was only adjacent to Ms. Sicilisi's room. The fact that they're hidden inside of a hollowed-out book in her bathroom, I think, is a clear indication of her ownership of those pieces of paper. Now, 4A was a small spiral notebook type of material. Also found inside that hollowed-out book was a few pieces of distinct orange paper that were also found in Ms. Sicilisi's purse, and which were, I believe, we can't tell in the appendix because it's not color, but the court obviously has the records, but which made up Commonwealth's Exhibit 6, which Detective Haney also described as O-sheets, but which I'm not relying upon for this second discrete avenue of conspiracy. And with the court's permission, I'd like to move on just so that I don't waste the remainder of my time. The first theory of conspiracy proffered by the Commonwealth is that the California shipper, And I feel completely content calling him Mike Estrada. I understand that the appellant objects to this, but this came in at trial without objection. Detective Haney testified, I believe on page 25, that the box was sent by Mike Estrada from Berkeley, California. So as far as I'm concerned, Mike Estrada from Berkeley, California, sent these drugs to Ms. Sicilisi for purposes of this trial. That given, and under Zuniga, there are two requirements. The Commonwealth has to show, one, First, that the shipper, in this case, Estrada, had to know the buyer's intended illegal use. And again, I think if you're sending 6.5 pounds of marijuana to someone, you have to assume that that person is going to go around and turn around and distribute that material. Detective Haney, again, testified that that's inconsistent with personal use. But the Commonwealth also has to show an additional element, and that's essentially what we're arguing about. I think everyone can agree that this material is wholly unlawful, but the Commonwealth also has to show that in some way the shipper furthered or tried to promote that scheme. And in this case, I will concede that the record is not as replete as Zuniga is in terms of evidence of that furtherance motive. I think what we have, a valid argument, though, is that just given the nature of the material itself and the vast quantity that the shipper, Estrada, had to know that Ms. Sicilisi was going to turn around and sell it. Further, we have a text message that was received by Ms. Sicilisi's phone on the morning of the raid, and the text message said something to the effect of package scanned in Spotsylvania at 10:18, something to that effect. And yes, we don't know who sent it. We can't prove that. Again, this is a circumstantial case, but I think that the circuit court, the trial court, reasonably could have concluded that that message would have come from the shipper who had that information, and that that is evidence of at least some form of continuing cooperation with respect to this shipment. And Zuniga does not require a continued course of conduct. And in fact, that court expressly held that a regular, sustained, and prolonged course of conduct need not always be proved when the commodity is per se unlawful. Under these circumstances, with the shipper's stake in the venture, I believe that was sufficient to establish a conspiracy between Mike Estrada and Ms. Sicilisi. And the third avenue, again, discrete avenue of conspiracy, regardless of whether charges were dropped against Mr. Sicilisi or not, I think this court has held plenty of times in the past in terms of accomplice liability and principles in the second degree, that their either orders of conviction or acquittal have absolutely no bearing to the prosecution of the defendant who was otherwise charged in the case of Barr. I think that same applies here. And again, the evidence demonstrated that marijuana was found throughout the entirety of the home. There were quantities of marijuana in both the parents' home, or the parents' room rather, bongs, things of that nature. Again, they were found in plain view. And I appreciate that the appellant is saying her assertion of innocence should not be used against her. But the Commonwealth's position is it is not her claim that I didn't do it that the Commonwealth is focusing on. It is her expressly identifying both her and her father, that the persecution is against her and her father. The evidence was that she lived at this home with her parents.
Right, but weren't those the only two people that were at home aside from the baby?
They were the only two people at home, and of course
They were the people babies. Who were taken into custody,
right? But I do think the circuit court could have reasonably concluded that based upon the marijuana found in nearly literally every room of the home, and Mr. Sicilisi's act of meeting the postal inspector at the car to take receipt of the package, combined with Ms. Sicilisi's repeated outbursts of, this is some conspiracy against me and my father, I do think that's evident. And as the court knows, we don't look at circumstantial evidence in isolation. And I concur that if we look at each of these items individually, then they're not going to add up to a conviction. But I would just simply quote to this court its own language in Emerson, that while no single piece of evidence may be sufficient, the combined force of many concurrent and related circumstances, each insufficient in and of itself, can reasonably lead a mind irresistibly to a conclusion. And in this case, that conclusion is that Ms. Sicilisi conspired to distribute marijuana. And unless there are any further questions, I'll rest upon the rest of the argument set forth on brief.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal, Ms. Pagliari.
Briefly, Judge. There's no evidence of a conspiracy, an agreement, or an act on or about August 20, 2012, to say that this whole case is about this giant shipment and then go, oh, by the way, she must have been selling marijuana also because it's all over the house and look at this stuff. It is a far cry from what's really going on here. The O-sheets themselves, we're assuming they indicate credit. We don't know that. That's pure speculation. They could indicate, I got to remember to charge this guy this much, again, assuming without conceding. I got to remember to charge this guy this much because that's what I told him I was going to charge him, or I got to remember to collect this much from this person. I'm just saying, as far as speculating that it is a credit venture, that is pure speculation if those things are even related to marijuana. Judge, there was no act, there was no conspiracy, there was no agreement on or about August 20, 2012. And for those reasons, I would ask you to reverse the conviction. If the court doesn't have any questions, I'm going to surrender the rest of my time.
Hearing none, thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and thereafter take up the case of Full Circle versus